It's Lars. Thank you for checking out my podcast, and have a great day.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and what better place to spend a sunny, beautiful Northwest Friday than my favorite gun store, Northwest Armory. We're going to be broadcasting here all day till 6 o'clock tonight, and we're glad to have you stop by in person. You know, we like to do these remotes. Monday it was Baton Rouge, today it's Northwest Armory, and I know we're going to hit every part of the Northwest at some point during the coming year. Glad to be with you on a First Amendment Friday, and glad to celebrate your First Amendment views, even the naysayers who always get to go first on this program. Somebody actually claimed the naysayers 90 seconds yesterday, and I'm happy to do that as well, as long as you'll stick around and engage in a conversation and maybe answer a question or two for me so that I can use those questions to show the foolishness of your point of view. I mean, honestly, that's where I'm headed with those questions. You know that, but you come forewarned and forearmed, and of course, you have the right to do it. Just don't come to a battle of wits if you're not equipped to take it on. Anyway, on First Amendment Friday, we welcome all calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. You probably have heard in the last few hours the reporting of the Johnny Depp comment. When was the last time that an actor assassinated a president? And now he says, oh, it was all just a joke and a bad humor or a bad way to say it. No, I don't think it was a joke at all. I think an awful lot of Hollywood liberals do not like the current president of the United States, and while they never would have suggested, and they would have reacted vigorously if somebody had suggested violence toward President Barack Obama, they don't seem to mind doing it to President Donald Trump. They think he's fair game, and they might be led to believe that by an awful lot of people who are mainstream politicians who let folks get away with saying these things. And when I say get away with it, I'm not suggesting that the government shut down free speech. No, perish the thought. What I'm suggesting is when you hear people speak that way, when I hear people speak that way on my show, if they suggest violence towards somebody who's merely an American politician, whether I agree with them or not, I say you aren't allowed to say those things on my show. And you effectively shame them out of doing it. In this case, you've got a Hollywood actor paid tens of millions of dollars. Apparently, he's blown about two-thirds of $1 billion. $650 million he blew. I think that's the number. $650 million he's blown, and now he's kind of broke, so he's out suggesting violence toward the president. I think that's out of line. So our quick poll today is actor Johnny Depp's assassination comment a threat against the life of President Donald Trump, and does he deserve a visit from the Secret Service? We'll get to that. We'll talk about how the city of Portland stole money from ratepayers, water ratepayers, to fund pet projects, and now a judge has said they are on the hook for $17 million because they stole that money. Will the state parks in Washington state be closed for the 4th of July holiday weekend coming up next weekend if Washington state does not pass a budget? We'll talk to Virginia Painter, who's communications director for Washington State Parks. Does crossing the state line get you out of a drunk driving charge? Well, we'll give you the answer to that question as well. And should Indian reservations be exempt from paying taxes? They say they are when it comes to gasoline taxes. We'll tell you about the hippies who are headed for Central Oregon, 30,000 of them in the Rainbow Family, who plan to go out on public land without the proper permits and hold a big festival. They promise that they'll clean up the mess before they leave. Well, we'll see how that works out as well. And should gas taxpayers, those of us who drive cars and trucks, be funding goofy bike lane art, believe it or not? That's right. Your dollars are going to bike lane art. And a bunch of folks in the building trades, including Tom Kelly of the Neil Kelly Company, are pushing a carbon tax. I would suggest they have a major dog in the fight and that they see money to be made by pushing a carbon tax on the rest of us. All of that and every issue that comes up on First Amendment Friday. Glad to have your calls at 866-439-5277. Follow me on Twitter at Lars Larson Show, on Facebook at The Lars Larson Show, and you can always send emails to talk@larslarson.com.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense, presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. just the cold hard facts from Lars.
You know, I like to remind people not to commit crime because the government hates competition. This morning's news includes a reminder of the city government's willingness to steal from the public. A long time ago, the Portland Water Bureau got charter authority to charge whatever amount of money they wanted to charge as long as every single dime of it went to the task of supplying water. It's called an enterprise fund, and it's a great idea. You can charge as much as you want, but every dime of it has to go to the task you've been assigned. As a result, Portland now has the fifth highest water and sewer rates in America. Seattle's not far behind, growing at about 8% a year, far beyond any reasonable rate of inflation. Part of the reason the city has been violating its charter, spending water money on whatever pet project they want, things like model houses and public parks and public toilets for the bums, investigations of Superfund sites and the like. Well, yesterday, a judge confirmed that this was a violation of the charter, and they found the city stole $17 million from water users. Yes, the city may appeal, but if they do, one of the lawyers for the water users who sued warns the damages could go from $17 million to as much as $100 million. And guess who's on the hook to pay the tab? That's right, once again, taxpayers and ratepayers. And now the grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
Well, I'm going to put on this grill, unnamed, but it comes at the suggestion of one of my Facebook posters at The Lars Larson Show. It's a young lady who said, I used to love this city. I'm a black conservative woman married to a white man of Polish descent. Not how we describe it, but we're not politically correct. My husband can't keep a job when they find out he's a Trump supporter. And our car has been keyed with nasty remarks like Nazi scum, etc. The whole hood's been keyed as well. Southeast Portland, of course. Trying to get him to call you. I think he is fed up enough now to talk to you. I'm also a Trump supporter, so we get some strange looks. Love that Portland tolerance. Today's best email, but you can send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Phil writes in, Lars, when did it become okay to attack the police and have it be the officer's fault when they get wounded or killed? I'm 52 years old, and it never, I mean never, crossed my mind to do anything but be polite and quiet when being asked questions by an officer. I got pulled over 3 years ago, first time in 25 years, had my legal carry weapon in my duffel bag, had my driver's license, CCP, and registration right there when he came to the car. He thanked me and said it wasn't necessary to show him where it was. Gave me a ticket, but I was speeding. Great show, Lars. Signed, Phil. Send those emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Let me put on a good naysayer. Scott's on the line. Hey, Scott, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Well, thank you, Lars. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. What do we disagree about?
Yes, well, I'm a longtime listener, and I have the deepest respect for your opinion and your show.
Thank you.
You bet. Hey, I just wanted to... you know, you're always talking how the police department is good, and I know you know there are bad in that department and stuff like that also. Dealing with the Marion County Sheriff's Department, and I was arrested in the town, and there was like 20 to 25 sheriffs there, and they all had their
guns.
Well,
you must be quite a criminal.
I've never been in trouble in my life.
Okay.
I'm going to be 65 years old. Never been in trouble in my life. Now, as far as being a criminal goes, no. But the criminals are in the police department.
But, Scott, I don't think there are criminals in the police department. There are occasionally police officers break the law, and they usually get caught, and they usually get prosecuted. So I want you to get to your point so we don't waste all day. What's the point?
Okay, we have one police officer that stated that he had to deploy his taser and shoot me with a taser, and he did.
Yeah.
And that I didn't cooperate. There's three witnesses that state that I was laying on my belly with my hands behind my back and my keys in my hands when the man stepped behind and said, okay, I'm going to taser him now, boys. And nobody said, don't do it.
I hope you filed a complaint, and I hope the police department investigates. I have a feeling, though, there may be more to that story that you left out. Glad to be with you live at Northwest Armory today for this beautiful First Amendment Friday in the Northwest, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. We're live on the Radio Northwest Network, 21 stations that serve Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, and glad to get your calls on this First Amendment Friday. Real pleased to welcome back to the program Attorney John DiLorenzo, who took on what I think a lot of people thought was an impossible task, and that was suing City Hall. But John proves that it is possible to actually win when you go after City Hall. John, congratulations on the win, and tell folks what was at stake here with the misuse of government money.
Well, Lars, thank you very much. It's been a long haul. You know, we started this case about 5.5 years ago when it was reported that the Water Bureau had financed the remodeling of the Rose Festival building, and had done a whole bunch of other things that had absolutely no conceivable association with the water system. And after a few reports in the press, a group of concerned citizens got together, formed an organization called Citizens for Water Accountability, Trust, and Reform. And we launched our effort, thinking that if we identified a number of ways in which the city was spending what was in essence trust funds for unrelated projects, that of course the city council would own up to it and try to rebuild the trust of the ratepayers. But, you know, it was kind of like commencing the Civil War at Bull Run, where everybody showed up in their finest outfits and their carriages, thinking it was going to be a six-month campaign, and it lasted 6 years.
and, John, people should appreciate that the only reason a suit like this could go forward is because a lot of people, including a friend of mine who just passed away last fall, Harry Merlo, were willing to step up and put up the money, knowing that they might be just flushing the money because they were going up against the 9,000-pound gorilla. But I want people to understand this, and I said this in the commentary about 20 minutes ago, but I want to make sure that you don't think I'm overstating this. When they set up the Water Bureau Enterprise Fund, they said you can essentially charge as much as you want to water ratepayers, but every dime of it has to go to the primary purpose of supplying water. So you can spend on dams and pipes and manhole covers and valves and all that, but you can't spend on anything but that. And they said, well, it's a slush fund. We can spend it on anything. Am I overstating the limitations on that money?
No, what you're stating what we said. We said the primary purpose has to be water-related. The city said, no, the courts don't have any business looking over the shoulder of the city council. It's up to the city council to decide what's related. And what the court did was it took a middle ground. It said it doesn't have to be the primary purpose, but it has to have a reasonable relationship. So think about it. The court has given us $17 million back that it says had no reasonable relation whatsoever to water. Now, if the primary purpose test had been the one that the court had adopted, which I think we could get on appeal if the city appeals this, you're talking about another $100 million of things that are these joint purpose expenditures. For instance, when the city decided to buy the Riverview Cemetery property, it had a joint purpose. The main purpose was a park.
Yeah.
But it had some purpose in stormwater relief. And so because there was some connection, that was allowable under the standard. What we got $17 million for is stuff that had no relationship at all, like voter-owned elections program.
That was where the city agreed to help fund campaigns for people who are seeking public office in the city. Oh. And they said, we'll pay the cost of your campaign.
Absolutely. Plus, the $17 million doesn't include the stuff that we got the city to voluntarily refund, like $1.5 million for the Rose Festival building, which isn't included in the $17 million. $950,000 the sewer fund gave to the Portland Development Commission to help investigate Centennial Mills. And they had nothing to do with sewers, and they wrote the check back finally when we wrote a letter saying, hey, what about this? We kept Sam Adams from using the sewer fund to advance the funds to help bond a biogas plant. I mean, when you add up the stuff that the city would have done that they didn't do because of the pending litigation, that's multiples on top of the $17 million that we've recovered.
Now, John, do you expect that they will seek an appeal and perhaps put the voters and the ratepayers at risk of paying $100 million back?
I don't know. You know, on the one hand, I think if they just say, okay, we'll repay the $17 million, that would be a good first step in regaining the trust of the ratepayers. I mean, let's face it, most of those decisions were made by people who aren't on the city council today.
Randy Leonard among them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be an easy thing to do. I mean, for instance, one of the major recoveries is the money they spent on the Powell Butte Nature Park. That was $5,578,000. Plus $389,000 of overhead and $889,000 of interest. Well, none of them had anything to do with that. They could very easily say, you know what, we're going to be very attentive from now on in making sure that whatever we spend out of the water fund and the sewer fund really is related to the provision of water and sewer services.
Hey, John, I'm up against the clock a little bit, but let me ask you this. Last quick question. Do you have any rough idea of how much the city has spent in legal fees to fight this thing?
No clue.
I mean, even based on what you and the other folks like Harry Merlo and the others who backed this lawsuit had to spend, would it have been about the same amount?
Well, I'll tell you what. Most of it, Harry Merlo and those guys, they spent the early money. Our law firm has basically done this on a contingency basis, which means we're not going to get more than what we spent. We'll probably get less, but we've got over $2 million of time.
Holy
over 6 years
cow.
Into this.
That's extraordinary.
Think of what the city's got into it, right.
Yeah, that much or more. John, congratulations again. I wish you luck, and I hope the city regains its sanity and says it would be a fool's errand to try to push this from a $17 million loss to a $100 million loss. But given the decision-making process at the Crazy House over at City Hall, I'm not sure they'll go that direction. John, good job.
Lars, thanks for your support of our causes. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. That's John DiLorenzo. It's First Amendment Friday live at Northwest Armory. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We're live at Northwest Armory today for First Amendment Friday. Glad to be with you. I'll get to your calls in just a moment, but I want an update from Virginia Painter, who acts as the communications person for the Washington State Parks and Recreation Department. Ms. Painter, thanks for taking the time to come on today and tell me this. If the state of Washington, if the legislature now, and I think triple overtime, does not come up with a budget by this time next week, are you telling me that the state parks in Washington State are going to shut down?
That is correct. The Constitution of our state requires that if there's no budget in place by June 30th, then state services shut down on July 1. That includes state parks.
Can you describe how that process is going to work? Do you start on Friday and just start turning the keys and turning off the light switches and locking people out on the 4th of July weekend?
Well, it has to start a little bit before that, but the public won't see that part. If we are so unlucky as to get to that point, the park managers will have started doing some of the background work before, but visitors will still be in the park, of course. And then on the 30th, they won't allow any new people in because we've got campers in there that we need to help get them packed up and out of the park early on Friday so that park staff has the remainder of the day to mothball things, close systems down, shut down buildings, electrical systems, all of that kind of thing. So it takes some time and it has to be done, you know, by midnight, and then the parks would be closed on July 1.
Can I call you Virginia?
Yes, please.
Virginia, call me Lars. Virginia, what do you expect is going to be the reaction of some of those taxpayers and or visitors to the state of Washington when they're told on Friday morning to pack your stuff, throw your tent in the car, and get out of here on Friday morning?
Well, you know, I don't, of course, nobody thinks this is fun, I'm sure, but by that point, people will know, and we've done our best to alert the customers who have reservations that go through that time. So hopefully they will have gotten an email notification, and park staff will be talking to people as we wait. We'll still be waiting for, you know, if we don't have a budget deal by then, we'll still be waiting to hear, but there'll be notification as people come into the park those last few days while we're waiting, and we'll be posting notices and so forth. But, you know, it's serious because most of us don't get that much vacation, or we have to plan ahead pretty far for it. So it is a place where people can feel the pain if there is not a budget by then.
See, and that's the concern I have, Virginia, is that you've got people who right now are hearing this. They may be hearing it for the first time, and they're thinking, but the whole family planned to go for 4th of July weekend at one of the 125 state parks, and does that mean that they may not know whether to pack all that camping gear in the car as late as Wednesday or Thursday night, and whether or not the time that dad or mom or both took off from work is going to actually be spent in a state park somewhere or sitting in the backyard staring at each other over 4th of July weekend.
And that is the question, and that's what we're all waiting to see what happens here. But we're just trying to do the best we can to alert people and also to assure folks that if they've got a reservation and they're pretty set on going, keep your reservation in place, because if it should happen that there's a shutdown, all of those reservation-related interruptions to vacations would be fully refunded. And, of course, that doesn't make up for it all, but at least no one's going to lose their money over it. So we're kind of encouraging people to leave things in place and, you know, plan on going, but check the website as the days approach, because we'll be keeping that updated as best we can, you know, to let people know what's going on.
Virginia, I asked the state of Oregon if they were in the same boat, because they are also have a dysfunctional legislature that can't figure out how to pass a budget. They still don't have a budget. Washington doesn't have a budget. But they say they're going to use a continuing resolution, much like Congress does, where they pass a bill out of the House and Senate, and it flies to the governor, and the governor signs it, and then they operate on under the previous budget at the same rates. You know, employees still get paid and all that, and they go ahead and operate, and they said, we will not be shutting down even if the state of Oregon does not have a budget. Does Jay Inslee and do the legislators have the ability to pass an ongoing resolution, say sometime this weekend or early next week, so that things could go on uninterrupted, or is that not possible under the Washington Constitution?
Well, I don't really know the nuances of that, but what I do know is that if that were to happen, it would be very costly, very confusing, because you've got timelines that you have to follow as an agency to alert contractors, to let employees know. So you have to basically do all that again, and it's pretty labor intensive. So I don't really know if it's technically something that they would do, or if it's a good idea.
Let me push back on that a little bit, because from time to time we hear about school districts that where the contract runs out, the two sides are still at each other's throats, and they haven't come up with an agreement, and they agree to operate under the existing agreement going on into the future in maybe 30 or 60 day increments. That's not possible. If other local agencies do that and continue to operate under the old, you know, the old budget and the old agreement, why would that not be possible for something like state parks as we head up to a really important American holiday?
Well, what I'm saying is I don't know. That's not really in my that's not really my job, and I really don't know the technical answers to that. So I really can't answer.
See, I'd love to lay this at Jay Inslee's feet and the leadership of the House and Senate. Say, if you folks just, you know, fly a bill through, if you can't get the whole budget done, just let people continue to operate and have a decent holiday weekend. And not, because it's one thing for the state, if they finally pass his budget at midnight on Thursday night, they say, fine, you guys can all do it. Mom and Dad are at home in bed, and they haven't even packed the car because they thought, well, we're shut down. They don't have a budget yet. So, you know, 4th of July is messed up for us. And holding people to the last second seems like a really lousy way to treat citizens and visitors.
Well, let's just hope for the best. What we're doing is we're hoping for the best, planning for the worst, because, you know, a lot of what we do is planning. I'm still optimistic. I'm still hoping, and I think we are in general hoping that this will not be a problem when it comes to the first day of the new biennium.
Well, let's hope not. Ms. Painter, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you.
That's Virginia Painter from the State Parks of Washington State, where Washington State does not have a budget as we speak today. If they still do not have a budget a week from today, then the state parks begin closing down heading into the Independence Day weekend. And how do you like that? Like I said, the government is capable of screwing up an ice cream sundae. Let's go to Nancy in Edmonds. Hey, Nancy, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
It's about the threats of violence that celebrities like Johnny Depp and Madonna and Kathy Griffin and those actors in Central Park have been making against the president.
Yes.
I want people to understand that these are not comments that are protected under the First Amendment. They are committing a crime.
Yes, they are.
And they really, I think you said they should receive a visit from Secret Service agents.
At the very least.
I would say FBI agents. But they should be hauled in at least for questioning, and I can guarantee you if a couple of them were, these threats would stop.
I agree with you, and Nancy, when Johnny Depp says, well, this was just a badly phrased joke, I'll tell you what, try a joke like that at the airport the next time you're going through the TSA line.
No.
Say, I've got a bomb in my suitcase, or I've got a gun in my backpack, and see how they take the joke, because I don't find these jokes funny.
You would be back against the wall so fast it would make your head spin.
That's right, and people understand. When you're in a certain position, like standing in the airport line, or if you're a big Hollywood celebrity, you don't go out and threaten the life of the president into the United States, because as you point out, Nancy, correctly, it is a federal crime to threaten the president or his family or the vice president or the secretary of state and a number of other offices. Nancy, thanks a lot. I appreciate you listening. It's First Amendment Friday, live from Northwest Armory today, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
I don't know. A lot of wonderful dark places he could go. It's just a question. I'm not insinuating anything. By the way, this is going to be in the press. It'll be horrible. But I like that you're all a part of it. When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
Good old Johnny Depp talking to a crowd. When was the last time an actor assassinated a president? Clearly a reference back to John Wilkes Booth, who again went after a Republican president. And then Johnny Depp says, but I'm not an actor. I lie for a living. Yeah, ha-ha, very funny. Hope the Secret Service has a long conversation with you. Let's go to Naysayer Gabe. Hey, Gabe, welcome to First Amendment Friday. We love naysayers on this program. What's on your mind?
Well, I listen to your show every day, Lars, and I really like a lot of the things that you say.
Thank you.
Except for your view on cops.
Okay.
Cops are people. They're people just like us.
Well, except for the canine cops. They're not people, but, you know, that's all right.
Sure. They make mistakes just like us. They're in a position of authority. I think they should mandatorily wear body cameras. It shouldn't even be a question in anybody's mind. I don't know why it's not happening yet. It takes all the he said, she said out of it.
Well, it doesn't. But yesterday I took the position that I think all police agencies should use body cams. So we're on the same page on that one. But here's where it gets complicated.
I just don't like your view on like your callers that call. And then you always say that, oh, there must be something more to the story. The cops couldn't possibly have done anything
wrong.
No,
hold on. In that conversation a few minutes ago, I said the police do occasionally commit crimes while on duty, and they are almost always caught. They are prosecuted. And, I mean, there's a cop back in South Carolina who's going to prison for murder because he murdered a guy while he was in the line of duty. And the fact that he shot him in the line of duty, he shot him for no good reason, and the man's going to prison for murder. So when you say you don't believe they're prosecuted, well, give me an example of a cop who committed a crime who didn't get prosecuted. Give me one.
I bet you that 100 people could call into your onto your show right now and give you an instance where they were unjustly wronged by the cop.
Listen, I got to tell you something.
Nobody would listen to him.
Gabe, there's a, well, One of the rules I always had as a reporter is if I walked into jail or into a prison, and I've walked into dozens of jails and dozens of prisons, do you think I, in one of those occasions of going into a jail or prison, met a single person who walked up and said, Lars, I'm in here because I committed a crime? You think I met one person
not.
Like
they
that?
All said
okay.
That they were innocent. Of course.
That's right. And everyone who's pulled over by the cops, even the ones who know they're speeding, occasionally you say, well, I was speeding, like the one of the emails I read today. But for the most part, people say, this cop pulled me over for no good reason, just because I was 20 miles an hour over the limit. Well, come on. You know, most people understand why the police are going after them. And when somebody says, the police had me flat on my stomach, on the ground, with my hands behind me, and then just stood back in front of witnesses and tased me for no good reason. Don't you think I have a reason to suspect that he's left something out of that story?
Sure, I can think that there might be something left out of that story. But, you know, when the gentleman told you that he's 65 years old and never been in trouble with the law in his life, it just makes me question, why are they running that guy through the ringer so hard? Why
maybe because of, you know what the best reason is to run him through the ringer? No matter what kind of person he's been to age 65, whatever he's doing at that moment is what gets the police to pull you over. And if you think about it, most cops have a strong sense of self-preservation, not just against people trying to kill them, but people trying to ruin their career. So in most cases, the police understand if I go out and violate the law in interacting with this citizen, I may end up in jail, but at the very least, I may end up without a job and without any prospect of getting another job. And most people who are sensible say, I'm going to avoid doing the kind of stupid stuff like tasing people for no reason. Now, as I said, there are cops who murder occasionally and they get caught and they get convicted. And I'm just going to tell you, though, that when somebody tells me a partial story, I can hear partial stories all day long. And it frustrates me because I wish people be honest about it. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Scott in Polesbo. Hey, Scott, thanks for listening. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
So this is in regards to the public park shutdown that you were just discussing. So I think this is a prime example where, you know, when everybody owns something, nobody does. So last I checked, these are essentially public servants, public employees that are managing a resource that we all own.
Yeah.
Okay. So for them to say, when there is an inkling that the budget is not going to be passed, for them to say that they, the servant, are going to shut down use of this resource that we own seems kind of counterintuitive to me.
Well, let me put it this way. Somebody asked me this yesterday in the office and said, why do we need public employees at a park? And I said, well, before you even get into disputes between campers, which can certainly happen, when someone... Someone shows up to go camping, and if you're going to a developed campground, you expect trash service. You expect the water turned on. You expect when you walk into the John that there's a roll of toilet paper there. Those things all have to be done by someone. And then you get the issue of what happens when you say, this is the campsite I reserved, and you show up, and there's somebody else camped in it. And you say, who should I talk to about that? And you say, well, I'm sorry, the state employees who were supposed to do that, you decided you didn't need them anymore. Some of that does take management, because otherwise, the guy who said, well, my RV and my tent is too big for my site, so I'm just going to lop over into your site, that person needs to have a talking to with the park ranger so that that managed piece of public property gets used by everybody equitably. Otherwise, you know, whoever's the biggest and strongest guy or the guy who looks meanest is going to get the biggest campsite, the best campsite. It's First Amendment Friday, live from Northwest Armory, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.